traditions in the great outdoors. Welcome to Ozark Traditions TV podcast, a place where outdoor topics are discussed. Now sit back as today's host brings you the outdoors inside.
Ozark Traditions in the great outdoors.
All right, everybody, welcome back to another Ozark Traditions TV podcast. I'm TJ, I'm here with Matt and Justin, and today we have team member James Edwards on the phone with us. He kills all the big deer. If you guys watch any of the episodes, he's the one that's killing all the big bucks, and he gets to go do all the cool stuff. Like, I think he shot an elk. I mean, he's the reason we're as good as what we are is because of the guys. So we thought we better bring him on here and let him brag about himself for a little bit and let everybody kind of get to know him. So, James, how you been doing, buddy?
Doing good. I don't know about all the big deer, though. I definitely didn't get one this year. My boy had to show us up on that.
Yeah, my wife killed a bigger deer than me this year, too. So, I'm still after him. I mean, I went tonight and seen, like, 25 deer, and not one of them had horns on its head because they've all fell off. But I can still dream that maybe one's hanging in there.
We did have one real good deer that we had a video of last year when I shot the deer with my bow that we had let go. And this year he came back, and he legitimately probably grew probably 40 inches probably this year from a 3 to 4 year old. And he had moved on our farm probably from where Kellen's tower is all the way down to the back of our place. It's probably 2.5 miles. He moved all the way across the neighbors and went all the way to the back, and he was legitimately there every day. And he's probably 150 inches, and I let him go for 5 days in a row. We've seen him every day, but now he is back on his feeding patterns back over there, so he's made it through season, so he should be something that'll be real good to chase next year.
Yeah, all my big bucks that I chased all are still alive because they taunt me every night. They come, I found all their sheds, and they come out they come out every night, you know, bald headed.
And well, then, yeah, probably right under your stand.
Oh yeah, and you know, and I'm not gonna sit here and lie, like I haven't thought, boy, I could just shoot him. And then we could stick the horns back on his head, take pictures, and get him mounted. And then I'm like, nope, he made it. I'm going to wait and see what he is next year. So all my big bucks, like I was talking to Matt, when I first got here, my target buck now is about 115-inch 8-pointer, and I've seen him 3 times. And I'm like, buddy, he's the only one with horns on his head, so he better watch it. Because if he gets too close, I'm not going to say I ain't going to send it. But I did today, or not today, a couple nights. I've been watching this one doe, and I don't know what is going on with this. Can deer get mange? I mean, well, I sure think anything anything with hair, because
she might be changing her coat colors.
No, she had no hair. Like her back hems has like no hair. It's just skin. I don't know if she
got hair.
Yeah, I don't know, but she's real rough looking. And I tried to Mohican sneak her the other day. She was standing out in the middle of this field, and I thought, you know what, I'm just going to, because she kind of just limping around. I thought, I'm going to just go shoot. I wasn't going to try to film it or nothing. I was just going to try to finish this thing. I mean, it was in pretty rough shape. Guys, I can't even sneak up on a deer that's been hit by a car. I mean, it winded me and was out of there, and I was like, well, dang it. Like, I can't even get one that's been run over. Like, it's just been rough. But I've seen her 2 or 3 times. She's still alive. I don't know what's going on with her. I filmed her a little bit last night, so maybe I could put it on the big TV and kind of get a better idea. And then I keep waiting to see.
It's safe to say you probably couldn't have found that three-legged one last week.
Well, that's what, and I've been hunting that same area because, you know, I thought, well, I know that guy didn't even go look for him. So I thought, I'm just going to keep hunting here, and that little forkhorn shows up, I'm going to shoot, you know, I'll shoot him. I can't even find a three-legged deer. It's rough. But I did today, and it was weird. This whole deal's weird. And I found a deer in a pond with its head cut off. And I don't know if the, because this thing's like right in the middle of this property I hunt. There's no road close to this. I mean, you'd have to been like really trespassing and to kill this deer. But I seen some tractor tracks. But I'm like, Matt, it was like on the pond bank, and I don't know the landowner, Danny, I don't think he would dump a deer in his pond. You know what I mean?
No.
But it's like clearly had its head cut off. It's a mystery. I don't know. It didn't look like a real big bodied deer, but it was definitely, I mean, it was a buck. I mean, them parts were still there. It just didn't have his head. I don't know what I got going on. I don't know if Justin sent the guys, has been hunting his place down here.
Right.
Or what's going on. So.
Hey, we've been through a lot of that from road hunters up there. There's nobody that lives on the back half of our farm back there, and the road goes right through the middle of it. And we had made some friends with the agents in the county, and they spent a lot of time down there and ended up catching some people. But we were finding 2 and 3, maybe 4 deer every year that we were out burning native grass that were dead by the road with their heads cut off.
Yeah.
And you know it's the ones that you've been hunting.
Yeah,
it's always how it is.
It's always the way it works.
See big bucks, and then...
Yeah. We've worked hard up there, about 600-700 pounds of mineral a year, and, you know, food plots and everything else, and somebody shoots them off the road.
Yeah, I mean, it's aggravating, but that, you know, and like where me and Matt live is a rural area, it's just gravel roads, so.
Right.
I mean, you almost rolled up on some guys this year. They were just looking at them with the doors open.
They weren't going to shoot.
No, they said they were. The only thing they had was the binoculars on top of their rifle. They didn't have.
Yeah.
So.
That was neat.
But they wasn't going to shoot, you know. Sure. Anyways. We kind of got off topic. We're supposed to be learning about James, and here we are. See, I told you we'd end up talking about something crazy.
Hey, that's all right. That's all right.
Now, that's how this podcast James, works.
How did you get started hunting?
We've always hunted our whole lives. I mean, as far as like video wise, are you talking or
just in general from time you started to now?
Well, I killed my first deer with my dad when I was 9. That was a long time ago. But, you know, always hunted from as quick, you know, as soon as we could hunt, we were always out hunting and just carried the tradition on. So it's been, I don't know, a lot of years in the woods and a lot of time and spent in nature, and it's just a fun thing to do.
So, what in the world made you decide you wanted to start picking a camera up and trying to film this stuff?
Well, back when they had you remember the old VHS tapes?
Oh, yeah.
Well, I used to borrow my aunt's camera all the time and take a backpack full of VHS tapes. And we couldn't have been 15, 16 years old. And we would go out and with the VHS tapes and record, try to get as much stuff on there as we could. And then when I was 18 or 19, I got on to Outdoor Specialties and did the whole East Coast hunting show thing and went down to Texas and Alabama and met a lot of really cool people, met Night and Hail and just all kinds of people in the hunting industry. And it's just kind of stuck with me ever since. So, yeah. You know, technology evolves, cameras evolve, and it just makes things easier and better. And
I couldn't imagine editing VHS tapes.
That's us sitting here thinking.
Oh, I could not either. That would be a mess.
I mean, is it fun, Matt?
Just got to convert it,
he said. See, okay, so.
He said it ain't no big deal.
Yeah, nothing for a cost. Well, then fine, I'll go buy one of them VHS tapes.
Yeah, you
recorders.
Will.
They're small too. I remember how small they were.
Put them on your shoulder.
Yeah, we
so this one, we had a shoulder and we'd throw a camouflage blanket over whoever was running it and just leave the lens poked out the end of it. The poor guy under the blanket had no idea where anything was coming from.
Yeah, and they always had the coolest microphones. I can remember. I wish I like the Fitzgerald and them when the microphone was like 3.5 foot long.
Oh yeah, yeah,
and it had a cord 20 miles long because you didn't have cordless nothing.
Right.
It was just awesome. See, I grew up with like watching Marty Stauffer. I think I said that right. And I always thought that was some cool stuff. Like us youngins here, you know, we had Michael Waddell we was watching and all the Real Free guys and the Mossy Oak and, you know, the Hunter Specialties was a big deal when I was growing up. Like they were pretty hot. Philip Vanderpool, you wanted to be like all of them guys. And then Mark and Terry, they kind of, but now, you know, it's getting a little bit sideways on some people, but I always wanted to try to do it, to try to film it. And I always thought, oh, you know, it can't be that bad. You know, it's got to be easy. These guys.
Yeah. I mean, you go look at the video and, you know, you get to watch a 17-minute video on TV, but you don't realize how much time actually goes into getting that 17 minutes worth of video.
Yeah, now that I've dabbled with it for a couple of years now, like, we'll watch it, and people's like, oh, that was cool. I was like, yeah, that was about 4 days worth of footage right there. You guys just watched
yeah,
it.
Yeah, exactly.
Minutes. So it's a lot of work, but it's cool. And what I'm excited and I'm glad we're doing that I do this is, like, this year my little boy killed his first deer. And I've got it all on film. I don't care if it ever goes anywhere. I'll always have it to go back and watch it.
Yeah, that's right. You'll always have it.
Yep.
I just download all mine on an external hard drive, and there it is forever, you know?
Yep. And then Matt's little boy killed his first turkey on film this year. Yep. So and his first deer.
Yeah, both.
So it's that's what's cool about it for me. You know, ain't none of us in here to get famous or nothing. We just like to do it and share with people what we do. And around here, it's why it's called Ozark Traditions.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, most of us are raising kids, bringing the kids into it.
And right. That's what it's all
everybody
about.
Everybody on here at probably one point has videoed a kid somewhere. I know Matt yeah. has, and I mean, everybody has, which to me, that's what makes it really cool is all the kids getting out and seeing the smiles on their face.
Yeah.
And,
well, and it's almost more fun than... Because, like, when I go try to kill a deer, it seems like it's turning into work nowadays. Like, now,
yeah, well, for when me, your kid does, it's totally different.
Right, yeah. Which I've been trying to get Drake, my little boy, he's wanting to kill a buck. Well, he might have waited a little too long on that, but there's a ton of spikes out in these places, and he just, which we've only got, 3 days left, and I've still got, he's still got a cross or a bow tag, but he's kind of lost interest in it now. Because I go every day, you know. He's like, Dad, you going hunting? I went tonight. About shot a nanny goat, but she winded me. Okay, so hunting in a bottom is the hardest thing in the world to do. And these fields I hunt are all in a bottom. You know, it's just a big bottom. And I get down there, and I'm like, oh, this wind's blowing perfect. Well, it's not a short walk from the milk barn to where I hunt back there. Matt knows.
Yeah, I've been there.
I'll get all the way back there, and it just completely... decides it's going to blow somewhere else. I'm like, well, screw it. I'm getting in it. I walked all the way back here. Maybe the deer will do something different. Nope. They come out. I mean, I had her at 30 yards, and I'm trying to... I have to run my... And people listening to this may not... If you film, you know what I'm talking about. I had to run it on manual focus because it's thicker than a Snicker in there.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you've ever tried to self-film with and film, keep it focused, get on it, get your bow... and not get busted in the wintertime when there's no leaves on the trees.
It's tricky, yeah. It's tricky.
About impossible. Like, it was, and...
It's about impossible to reach from your bowstring back to your camera. Just that right there.
Yeah.
Without them seeing you.
No, they'll do that every time. So I got busted for about the 10th time. Like, I'm just like, and what sucks is this farm I'm hunting, there's hundreds of does on it. It feels like probably not that many. You know, I'm exaggerating. There's probably 25, 30 does every night in these fields. And I thought, man, you know what? There's 3 days left. I'm just going to go fill my last bow tag and call her good. Well, that's not going like I thought it was going to go.
Out for you.
You know, I was like, man, how many does did I pass in October and November? You know, this will be easy.
September.
Yeah, you wait till the last week and then you can't get it done.
Can't get it done. Like yeah, I said, that little buck better not there. Get close is all I can say. I'm not
you
much.
You talk about... I was going to say, you talk about wind and stuff like that. When we went to Colorado, that's a challenge there. The way that terrain is up there and the wind.
Yeah. And them elk are pretty quick on that wind deal. I've never hunted them, but I've watched a lot of it. And they
go downhill real fast.
Yeah. Yeah, they can get out of there. It's amazing how animals that big can move in that kind of terrain, but they can get. Those are cool. So tell us a little bit about this elk hunt, James, because we got to talk to the guy who killed the first archery elk in Missouri?
Yep.
We got to talk to him earlier this year, but we haven't talked to anybody about hunting out west for him, which is where most people do. This guy shot this one southern Missouri. So how was it? You know, how did you guys go about doing it?
So we've been out. So this was my fifth year out there in a row trying to catch up to one. So it's been a lot of hunting and a lot of trying to figure things out. And my original people that I go out there with, they weren't able to go. So we went to another area that I went with my one of my helpers, and I kind of knew from when we were out there during rifle season kind of where they were. So we sat, I don't know, probably 3/4 or a mile away, glassing the top of this mountain from another mountain and kind of seen where they were. And then we started to slowly hunt in there, and we thought that we were doing, you know, being sneaky and shoot. When we got up there, there was 10 other people hunting up there and all around us all day. So we just decided, well, we'll just sit still in one area, not move around, and let them move around, and maybe they'll push us something. And 10:30 one day they did. They pushed that bull and two cows up in front of us, and they were like 50 yards, and we were gonna 1-2-3 them. But I mean, when you're that close to a bull elk and he stops in an opening and your buddy don't have his bow pulled back, you just go ahead and sneak your arrow on down through there and go ahead and shoot. Your buddy will just have to figure it out later.
Yeah. You just shoot him and ask for forgiveness later.
Remember that poor guy, his face when he looked at me after I shot that bull and they spun and turned and went downhill, he looked at me and said, well, what happened to 1-2-3? And I said, he's late. Yeah. I don't know.
You didn't count as fast as me, apparently. I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, but it was one of the funnest things. You know, we packed on four, you know, it's granted it was on four-wheeler, but I'm going to tell you, on four-wheeler, getting 6 miles up a mountain is no easy task in some of that stuff.
No.
And we just took bare essentials. We were in a regular camping tent. We didn't even take my outfitter tent, was still in the truck, and we slept on the ground, and it was rough, and I'm too old for that.
Right.
And it was tough, but it was fun, and we got all the way up in there, and it took probably, I don't know, 3 or 4 days for us to finally catch up to where the elk were. But when we finally got into them, there was one herd that had 45 or so in there that came through. And I mean, we finally got right on them, and my buddy ended up getting a shot at one. And ultimately, you know, he probably should have shot the cow. I looked over and seen the bull come over the hill, and I'm like, oh, there's a bull. So, you know, he waited with his bow drew back, you know, for too long. And then the bull got up there, and of course there's one small 3-foot pine tree out there, and that's the only pine tree in that little field that he was in. He stopped right in line with it with a kill shot, so he had to wait even longer. Yeah. And then he just wound up missing. He didn't catch up there. So
is this all public land?
Yeah, it's all public. Yeah.
Which I think a lot of Colorado is public. Is that where you went, was Colorado?
Yeah, there's a lot of public ground out there, but I'm going to tell you, there's a lot of hunters too. We thought, you know, we went out there before black powder season thinking, oh, we'll beat the crowd, but I'm going to tell you, we've seen...
The crowd beat you?
Yeah, I mean, they were everywhere. And the funny part is this is crazy. You're 6 miles from your truck. In the middle of, I mean, you're in the middle of nowhere. You know, you're miles, you're a good hour and a half from any town. And out there on top of the mountain, we're sitting there, and a husband and wife comes through, and we get talking to them, and they know some of the same people from the town, this small 3,500 town that I live in, because I used to live here. That's what's crazy, is just some of the people you meet.
Yeah.
Small world.
Oh yeah, it sounds like a lot of fun. One of these days, I'm gonna do it. I guess maybe.
We're gonna try and go black powder hunting again this year. Kellen's gonna go with us, my boy. It won't affect his school to be gone. They'll let him have a little tablet do his school work on. So
yeah,
we're gonna go out there and try to go black powder hunting. If we don't draw our tag, you have to draw a tag for that. So if we don't draw our tag, then we're going to go archery again.
So your bow tag was an over-the-counter tag?
It was. We were trying to get everybody, which we should have probably just applied as a group. That way everybody had a tag if we drew, but not all of us drew. And then it just didn't work out good for the first rifle season. So we just resent our tags. And my dad's been wanting to try bow hunting for a long time, and it was actually, if you get out there on that mountain, it's like turkey hunting is my thing. That's my passion right there. And you get out there on a hill or on a mountain, and you hear 20 or 30 bull elk all the way around you just bugling, it's just, I mean, it's pretty daggum cool. The sun's coming up and you hear all them things bugling and sounding off down in the valleys. It's neat.
Yeah. Well, I think we're going to take a quick break here, guys. And when we come back, we'll talk to James and see what he does know about this turkey hunting business.
Hi, folks. This is Matt Smith of Ozark Traditions TV. I hope you are enjoying this OTTV podcast. When you're not listening to the team members discuss hunting strategies and telling stories, you can go to our YouTube channel and watch your favorite episodes there. And while you're on the web, head on over to our Facebook page and give us a like. Thanks for listening to this week's OTTV podcast. Hunting with my family.
Who could ask for more? All right, guys, welcome back. We have done a little research on James here, and it's come to our attention that he's quite the turkey killer hunter.
World class
turkey hunter. Like Eddie Salters calls and asks for advice. And so, James, we heard about this, I'm probably going to say it wrong, World Turkey Hunt or however, this big turkey hunt. We got to hear about how this all went down and how you guys did down there.
That was a really good time. They wanted like $5,000 to enter the thing, or you could hunt your way to it. So I chose to try to hunt my way to it, and I successfully won twice the Eastern Turkey Division, which is, I don't know, to me it's pretty good. That's the biggest division there is. So we got to go. What's that?
I was just going to ask, how do you hunt your way to it?
Okay, so you enter the contest for whatever, you know, subspecies you want to hunt. And, of course, I'm in Missouri, so we picked the Eastern Turkey Division. And you can submit four turkeys, and it's all done by score. And we went, so ultimately that puts you hunting more than one state. So I hunted Missouri and Kansas 1 year, and Missouri and Nebraska the next year to get my Eastern turkeys killed. And we submitted the four birds both years, and I took first. So the 1 year we went out and we hunted the finals in Lacine, which is a great, great thing. It was one of the funnest hunting things I've ever done. You go in there, you draw your turkey out, or your property out that you get to go turkey hunt, and they give you 1 day to scout it, and then you get to go in there and hunt it. Well, the first day in there, we called in a big group, and I killed mine, but my buddy missed. So we got one turkey on the ground, and then you can add points by, like, doing a double, like what that would have been, or killing three birds in 1 day. Ultimately there, you could turn in four birds as well. And you had to have a three-man team, a mediator that was from the contest. So you had four people that were following you around turkey hunting. And we ended up placing eighth overall, which I didn't think was too bad, but we legitimately should have been second or third. We had a rule discrepancy. We thought that it had to be on a big camera, you know, our good cameras, you know. But the guys that won it, they videoed it on their cell phones. Everything has to be videoed that you do.
Right.
And they videoed it on their cell phones and won. If that was the case, I had my Tacticam on. And when one of the turkeys stepped out, he was 30 yards and I didn't shoot him because Craig couldn't see him. So I didn't shoot him. And then ultimately he walked away. Well, knowing that after the fact, if we would have shot that turkey, and if Leon would have killed his, that would have gave us three birds. And then we had one other opportunity to kill one and didn't. And we would have had our four birds. And with what, you know, look at one guy, that the reason why I say we'd have been second or third is because one team, they killed a 27-pound turkey in there. And that just put them so far ahead, it's kind of hard to accommodate that.
That's going to be tough to beat. I mean,
that's a pretty good
that
bird.
That thing had lead in its pants.
I guarantee you.
Not bad.
But yeah, it was a great, great deal. And it ultimately got shut down for reasons, and I don't know why, but the second year we didn't get to go back and hunt because they shut it down, and I just wish they would go back to it, because that's a thing I'd try to do every year. It's a blast.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds pretty interesting. I didn't, which me and Matt wouldn't be no good at it. We'd
have to, well, how was that? What was that, $5,000 to get in it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was $5,000 to enter, or you had to, well, like, hunt your way to it. You could, so they had the, you know, all the subspecies, but then they also had a category to where you could kill a multiple species bird contest. So there was like six brackets that you could hunt your way to it, which was pretty cool.
I'm just saying, with the turkeys, we'd had to pay.
Yeah, we're no good at turkeys. But, I mean, okay, so obviously Easterns are the biggest of the turkeys, right? Or I guess there's one like the Goulds, there's something down south, Texas or Mexico or something.
Arizona.
They have the...
Well, Easterns are the biggest, but you're only competing against that one subspecies. So if you're in the Merriam division, you're only competing against Merriams.
Right, because you couldn't hold a can. I mean,
no.
What's a Merriam game? 15 pounds is a big one, you know.
Right, yeah. You get 15, 18 pounds on a Merriam, you're getting up into a big Merriam, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was close. I mean, we had... I was fortunate, and I killed big birds those years. I just got lucky. Yeah. I knew from previous years where there were some older birds at, and we do legitimately. This is bad to say, but with my buddy behind the camera, he legitimately is like, "You're not shooting at the no. I know that turkey's young. We're waiting on an older one because you know your spurs are where you get most of your right. points at.
Yeah, your weight and your spurs. I mean, you can't go by a beard size, anyways. So,
and I felt kind of silly out there passing up mature toms coming in strutting and gobbling in your face, and I'm like, spurs aren't big enough. We're gonna let him go.
Right. You know? They have a big turkey contest here at the lake, and we know some guys, and that's.
Yeah, that's what
same
they do.
Deal. They'll let birds go.
Then you got me and Matt shooting
Jakes.
And are happy to do. Well, all right. So, which you'll see it. It'll be coming out. But we had this Jake come in, and he sat there. He strutted by that decoy for what? 30 to 45 minutes. No joke. Did not move. And these big toms was across the field. Well, they come down, and they looked at us, and then they just went on with their day. Well, this Jake's just standing there. And Matt's like, "Are you on him?" I was like, "Dude, I've been filming that turkey for an hour." I was like, "Hey, we're good." And he's like, "Oh, I've about had enough of this." So
I shot him.
He shot him. But
Jake's can make for a fun hunt. Last year, we had there was like nine Jakes or something that came in when we were sitting at Redneck Blind with Braden during youth season. And I was legitimately like rapping turkey music with my mouth call, and they were legitimately sitting 3 to 4 feet from our blind gobbling.
Yeah. Yeah. We had a group, I ended up shooting one of them, but we had a group come in on us, and there was four or five of them, and they jumped all over our decoy and stuff. And I shot the one. Well, if Matt would have had a tag, you could have killed every one of them. Once you shot the one, they just jumped on him, you know, and I was like, well, you got a tag? No, not till tomorrow, because it was the first week and we had to wait. So, which is good, because we let those jakes live.
Yeah, it's fun. That, when you put a kid in a blind and you put your all my decoys are at 3 yards. And I do that because at that point, you can hear the turkey breathing.
Yeah.
And you can see his eyes blinking.
Yeah.
I mean, and a kid sitting there, his heart's trying to jump out of his chest. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Well,
oh,
yeah. I mean, we had one at 40 yards, and that was our case.
Yeah, right.
Which me and Matt, it's so funny, though. Matt bought him one of the his little boys, Stevens 410, single shot 410, which is a pretty sweet little rig. It's got the screw-in choke.
Yeah, I think I'm going to pack it next year.
Right. It's way lighter. The shells aren't any cheaper, though. That TSS is crazy expensive.
Yeah, they're high.
But, this bird comes in, and me and Matt are both thinking this turkey's 25, 30 yards max. And he shoots him, and I mean Stone Cold Steve Austin dead, just whop. And you had your rangefinder, and I ran, it was 42 yards, and I mean, it looked like he shot him at 3 feet. I mean, he about took its head off. And I thought, boy, we'd have never let him shoot that far.
No.
At it that far. But this bird took like an hour and a half to come in. It stood behind us, behind the blind, and the landowner come on his tractor, drove up the hill. The turkey watched him. He come back down from feeding the cows. Turkey still watching him. And finally come in from behind us. And I hate that when they do that. That yeah. coming from behind you deal.
It's rough.
You know, why can't you just do like they do on TV? Just like walk across the giant green field strutting goblin right to the decoy. Boom. No.
Well,
there's a bluff behind us. I mean, it was straight up and down behind us, and you had to fly across. It was the worst possible path to get to where we were at, which we didn't even set up on that turkey. There was like five gobblers down in this field, and they every day.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, one of them surely will break off and come over there to us. Nah.
Not a chance. Well, there were so many hens.
They were henned up really bad this year where we were hunting. And this one Tom, he come from, I mean, we heard him gobbling that morning, never thought you'd ever have a chance. And that thing come.
He come a long way.
800 ways. Yards, I'd say, at least, because that field, I mean, you know he was on the other end of it. And Isaac killed him. I mean, it was cool. It was, like you said, it gets your heart pounding. I mean, he wasn't no 3 yards, but he was close enough.
Yeah.
But yeah, I like to try to get them as close as you can. It is so fun. I've legitimately been in buck brush, leaning up against a tree in my ghillie suit, and I've had my 12-gauge in front of me, and I legitimately had a hen step right over my 12-gauge, and while I was waiting on this tom to get up her.
Me and Matt.
I mean, she was right in my face.
Yeah, me and Matt had one a couple years ago. His tail fan kept hitting
the blind.
The blind as she'd go
when
by.
When she would turn, her feathers would just scrape along the blind. That was pretty cool.
Yeah, that's cool.
She was like fighting Matt. It was like the weirdest deal. We had a hen, Avian X hen, and she was like just jumping and
she
fighting.
She was the boss hen.
Did not like that one being there at all.
Mm-mm. Yeah, them boss hens. That's your key to killing a lot of turkeys is them boss hens.
Well, and
especially
it seems
when
like,
they're all henned up.
Yeah.
Boss hens are the way to get them in.
Correct me if I'm wrong here, but if you can keep calling at them things and almost kind of aggravate them, like if you, they'll
That's
come
the whole,
to you.
That is the whole point. When you have a flock of turkeys out there and it's springtime and you got toms after them, you changed it from calling to a tom to calling to the boss hen.
Yeah.
And if you get her talking and you just mimic her, you're challenging her and she's going to drag them hen, the rest of the flock up there with her.
I've done it before. Well, that hen that we were talking about, that's what I did. Well, we thought she had a tom with her, and apparently she didn't, or he just never showed up, one of the two. But you would call to her, and she'd make a call, and I'd do the exact same thing she did. And
yeah, you just mimic it, and they all, that's a challenge to them when you do that. We've killed so many turkeys mimicking boss hen.
Well, I mean, like you said, when they get henned up like that, that's about the only play you got because they're not going to leave hens. You're going to have to get those hens to come to you. Or you're going to have to hunt them like deer. You're going to have to see where pattern them like, hey, they crossed through here. We've tried to do that a couple times.
About the only other option you have is to call to the hen, and then when the toms gobble out there in the field or wherever they're at, gobble back at them. Because a lot of times, you sound like another flock up there, and those turkeys, they know who's in their neighborhood, you know what I mean? So right. If you're up there gobbling, they don't know who's up there. A lot of times, they'll drag them up there, too.
Now, James, do you use, like, a strutting tom decoy a lot, or do you use, like, quarter strut jake?
No, I don't. I just, if I'm going to use anything, that World Turkey Hunt, we got some... When we won eighth place, we got a whole truckload of stuff and some really nice Flambeau decoys was in there. And I mean, they're nice. They're reflective. They got iridescent paint on them. I mean, they're nice. And I don't use a strutting tom anymore because you can have a mature tom come in. If he's not the number one tom in the area, a lot of times he'll go the other way.
Yeah, we've had that happen.
So if you have just a Jake, and a hen, and push the Jake and, the stick on the ground as low as you can get it to make them feel taller, then make the, make the wild turkey feel taller than the decoy. They feel bigger, and it's a lot easier for them to come up and investigate your decoys when they feel bigger. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So you don't want to do like what I did last spring, get in a hurry and just jam that thing in there and start calling and when the thing pokes his head up over the hill and it's game on, the decoy falls over and he's gone.
See, the cool thing about Matt's farm is you have to have a hammer to drive the decoy stakes.
Yep. Oh, gosh.
Oh, it's terrible.
I've got a little rubber mallet we keep in the decoy bag.
Just hammer the stakes in.
Which a lot of times we'll go out there like the night before.
Yeah.
If we roost birds or whatever.
Well, so.
And drive all of our stakes for our decoys.
Here's the deal. Matt's farm, it's the same thing every year. And we keep screwing up and we say, we're not doing that next year. And then we do end up chasing them and running around all over. You can't sneak on turkeys on his farm. It's too wide open. It's just big fields and then there's ridge tops. Well, the turkeys will roost up on the ridge tops and they can see all them. You cannot sneak on nothing. You got to get in there hour before daylight, set up, and just wait them out. And there's the one, we call it the windmill field. Got a big windmill in the middle of it. Every year, there's turkeys down there. And then, you know, every once in a while, they'll be up on the ridge, and then we'll be up there, and we'll fart around with them and scare them and never see them. And it's like, you know, if we would just put a blind down there and just sit in that windmill field every day, one of those days, we'll kill a turkey. Now, we've done
that. Yeah, it's hard, though. It's hard because you hear them and you want to go
after it's bad hard.
You have no idea how hard.
It's so hard every year. I mean, seriously, he's not joking. Like, we're not going to do that this year.
Nope.
And then we get out there and you hit that call and you hear one gobble and you're like, oh, well, I think we can this time.
And it never works. Ever. No. Never works.
Have you, you know, during deer season, have you sat all day long and been out in your stand from sun to sundown and you watch turkeys go into one field and then they go into another one and they come back later and they go down somewhere else and they just keep milling around?
Yeah.
They do that same stuff in the spring. It's just different turkeys in different locations.
Right.
They still have their pattern. If you just sit there and wait them out, they're going to come back.
So
we've been down that road many times.
Do turkeys?
You got to have turkeys for that.
Yeah.
What's that?
You got to have turkeys for that.
That's for sure. Yep.
Are turkeys kind of like deer? Do they have like a springtime range and then a wintertime?
Yes, they do.
Yeah,
yes, they do.
Well, because my farm specifically, like in the spring, you know, I've got a few turkeys out there.
We got enough to hunt. You know, you got four or five gobblers,
right,
and some hens. But
man, in the, like the fall and the wintertime, it's just loaded.
I bet I seen 40 turkeys tonight across that third field.
Yeah, if people would start getting rid of more ground predators like coons, you know.
I've been on
that's
it.
Their number one predator of a turkey.
Yeah.
They're a ground nesting bird and they kill more turkeys before they even get out of the daggum egg than what anything ever gets a turkey. Right. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And
well, I just killed a lot of our turkeys last year.
Yeah, statewide, the whole state for, you know, 5 years, the entire state's, you know, it's spotty. Yeah, there's places that's had good hatches, but on an average, the entire state has been down for 5 years. And this year was actually the best one, best hatch, you know, out of the last 5 years. But actually, this year had a really good hatch. You know, if you can get the hens to have like a 3.2 or 4 or 3.4 average on raising pullets, then that's a pretty successful year.
Yeah, I think we had a pretty good hatch here around the lake. I mean, I've seen a lot of birds this year, a lot of young birds.
Yeah, we're seeing a lot here too, but so on our hunting ground, we removed over 30 coons out of there last year.
Yeah.
Yeah, my son.
And I know for certain that made a big, big impact.
We had a lot of
late layers last year.
Yep. Yep.
And the haybine or disbine got a hold of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you'll have, so those are probably younger hens that do that. Them younger hens, you know, and older hens will re-nest too, but younger hens, they get real sloppy with their nesting, and they'll go lay a clutch of eggs, you know, out somewhere that just gets eaten by a predator the next day, and then whatever, they'll lay three clutches of eggs if they're not successful until they try to hatch them. Them young ones will, and sometimes they'll just lay them all in the same area and not even go sit on them. Young hens will.
I think we hit two or three last year.
Yeah.
So
another, you know, another interesting thing that that I learned this year was, you know, hen turkeys, you know, you'll see them great big flocks of hen turkeys out there that's got all them pullets out there. Mm-hmm. So when they start grouping up, those hen turkeys don't necessarily raise their own babies. That's what's kind of neat about turkey is when they split back off to go in there, those some of them pullets from other hens or something will go with them, or they just get mixed up and they just go with a, you know, mature hen, and they're not raising their own babies a lot of times.
Yeah, see, I had three hens around my house this year, and they had eight little ones between those three hens.
Yeah.
Yep.
And best I could tell, they all made it, you know, until they got big enough to fly. So I figured, you know.
Which it don't take those poults very long to fly. I've seen little bitty look like pheasants.
Right.
And they'll fly up in the trees and stuff. But I don't know.
Yeah, if you can get them raised to that point, their success rate goes way up.
Yeah, I mean, they've got a fighting chance then. Which I don't know. Like, the poults, I feel like getting them hatched is the hardest part. Like, once they get hatched and can run a little, I think they got a pretty good chance. Other than, you know, weather. And, yeah, something's going to catch
them. If you have a lot of native grass in your area, that's a big thing for successful turkeys is having the, you know, timber with native grass or having native grass draws and stuff like that, because they have a thick canopy and they're real light on the ground. You know, they're not like fescue where it's thick on the ground and light on top. It's reversed. It's thick on top and light on the ground where then pullets can get through there. That's a pretty big thing.
So how do you how do you establish those native grasses, James?
So your soil has native grass seed in there, and that native grass seed can live like 30 to 40 years in the soil. The only thing you got to do is just start burning as late as you can, late February or sometimes in the morning, you know, right when your fescue is starting to green up, that's the time to burn it. Fescue does not like to be burnt when it's starting to green up at all. That's how you choke fescue out. And we have some of our sanctuaries, we'll go through there in the timber and we'll burn them things, you know, almost right before turkey season, because timber, you know, it keeps the floor clean, but the timber doesn't have the fescue growing in it. So it has native grass growing in there. If we keep that floor clean, that native grass will come up. So our timber has a lot of grass growing in it, which is another thing that's helping our turkey population. We found, you know, 4 or 5 coveys of quail out there this year too, so it's making a big difference.
Yeah.
So you touched on fescue. Most cattle farmers,
they're planting fescue.
On fescue.
Yeah.
Because that's the grass, because that's what's made this that's country right. In the cattle. So how would you fight that? You know what I'm saying? Like,
well, you're just going to have to be, like, if you're on a cattle grade, which we are, half of our property is cattle grazing. So they've drilled all the pastures on that side of the farm in fescue. So anywhere where there is timber, they didn't drill that. So we burn the timber every 2 years, it gets burnt. So that's putting a lot of bedding and a lot of nesting in the timber on where there's fescue.
So I guess what we're saying is, if you have a cattle farm and you got places you don't feed cows, like Matt's got a couple draws and stuff, where you don't have any cows in there, mm-hmm. you could make that habitat for your turkeys.
Absolutely.
Yeah, anywhere that your cows aren't going to be, you want to try to make that.
Yeah, you want to try and do controlled burns and do hinge cutting if you can. You know, hinge cut a couple trees a year with, you know, acorns and hickories even, and that stuff. When you hinge cut and you lay that tree down, that tree is going to live for a year or two cut properly on the ground. And that's going to broaden that leaf. All the leaves will bloom out on that tree, but it gives them a huge nesting area. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because that tree's laying down. And then, you know, in the fall, if you go through there and burn that, you know, you'll get a lot of grass coming up in there as well. So, I mean, it's just a combination of things that you do. Burning to create native grass is one of the best things that you can do to get them in there.
Yeah. Well, I have to. I mean, definitely have to try to do what we can do with that. So, all right, guys.
I did some clear cutting. I don't know. It was probably 2 years, 2.5 years ago. So now, and we thought it'd be good for the turkeys. It wasn't no good. We ain't seen a turkey since.
Another good thing I know about hinge cutting too. Before we're gonna go to a break here, but it's also good for the deer. The deer like to bed down a lot, and
they browse off that young growth on them trees. They'll browse like crazy on it.
Yeah. But, all right, guys. Well, we're going to take one more break, and then we'll come back and wrap up this episode. Probably talking about a little final week of the deer season here. So we'll be back here in just a little bit.
Hi, folks. This is Matt Smith of Ozark Traditions TV. I hope you are enjoying this OTTV podcast. When you're not listening to the team members discuss hunting strategies and telling stories, you can go to our YouTube channel and watch your favorite episodes there. And while you're on the web, head on over to our Facebook page and give us a like. Thanks for listening to this week's OTTV podcast. Hunting with my family,
who could ask for more? All right, guys, welcome back. James had to leave us. He had to do some family stuff, so it's just us three amigos back to the OG crew.
I think some kid wrangling.
Right. Yeah, I hear him. I got that thing going on at the house. But, well, we're winding down on the Missouri deer season, archery season here in Missouri. It's our last 3 days coming in here. I think I'm the only person that's hunting.
Yeah, ain't nobody else like crazy.
Right. So there's me.
Hey,
I just can't. I might hunt
Saturday. Depends.
Well, Saturday weather-wise is looking good. Which, hey,
wait a minute, ducks.
Yeah, I'm getting ready to tell you. You need to get your stuff. We're gonna go duck hunting Saturday.
Let's do it. Oh, hey, all right.
I told Gage. I texted him too. I ain't got no message out of him.
I talked to him today.
Okay, good. Anyways, back to the deer stuff. Anybody who is on our follows our Facebook page and stuff. We shared a picture of a deer, and this thing got hit by a car, or they just found it.
Now, Scott Luthy, if I'm correct, is who posted it.
Uh-huh.
So, I don't know anything about it.
Okay, so we really don't know what, but this is a giant deer. Big buck, probably, I'd say, what, 150s, 60s?
Look good.
Biggin'. Down in Lebanon, which is not, 25 minutes from here.
Right.
Which we're here at Lake of the Ozarks right now. I keep saying here, like everybody knows where we're at. If you're listening,
they ought to know.
Yeah, they should know by now.
Google us.
But down around Lebanon, Missouri, I mean, a big one. And I have to do a little more looking. Anybody who wants to know about it or see it, go to our Facebook page, and we posted pictures of it. It was a good one. I mean, it was a good one. It was the biggest buck I've seen in the month of January.
Yeah.
So, like I said, Missouri's archery season's rolling down, winding down. Tag sandwiches are getting made. Everybody's putting the mayonnaise and the lettuce and stuff on them.
I think, Justin, you got tag soup or sandwich?
Soup. He had tag soup.
Yeah.
Soup.
He's got soup. So many tags, he can make gumbo, you know?
Tag gumbo.
I've got two deer tags left that I have purchased, and they're both any deer tags because I didn't kill a buck with my bow, but... There's not very many bucks left in the world for me. Well, there is. They're all bucks, I guess.
You know, hey, back to the buck that Scott posted on our page. It was actually a 13 point. It had, looks like it had two kickers coming off the sides of it.
Yeah, it was a big deer. Too bad. I mean, we don't know. Did it say anything on there about what happened? Like, was it run over? Did somebody kill it? Or
it just says found dead in the city limits of Lebanon.
Yeah. So it probably got run over by a car or
CWD.
You know what, though? That's not the only big buck that's been found in the city limits of Lebanon.
No, when we did the deal at the Mighty Oak,
there was a
monster that's mounted in the Mighty Oak.
That got hit right there.
Yeah.
And that's right there. I mean, that's right on the edge of Lebanon. Well, I mean, it is in the city limits of Lebanon.
But yeah, it's town deer.
Big, guys, big. And if you've anybody's ever watched any of the... Oh, what's that guy called? I'm drawing a blank. He Seek One. That's all they do is hunt
Oh, yeah, yeah. Urban areas.
And that kid kills
some
giant dandies. Deer.
They're in like Atlanta, aren't
a
they?
A lot of Atlanta. Now they've been going to Tennessee a lot. Any of the big cities, places you wouldn't think about going deer hunting. Right. These guys are shooting average like 170.
And that's like I showed you earlier this year, that lethal injection outdoors.
Yeah, that was a giant 8-pointer that kid killed.
Pennsylvania.
Like, yeah, probably middle of town.
Oh, yeah. I mean, chain link fence backyard stuff.
Sitting in a jungle gym, you know. And that's what is weird. You watch these guys do that. You got to throw everything out the window. You can't be worried about noise. You can't be worried about nothing. You just got to hang a tree in this guy's backyard.
Right. Right by the hostas.
And shoot a deer. I mean, that's what they do. I mean, they just... And you have to be a really good shot.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, because you don't want to... one and it run off and die in Susie's front yard, you know?
Right.
So you got to kill this deer. I watched there was it's like a reality TV show and I can't remember the name of it, but these guys was deer hunting in urban.
You're right.
And this old boy shot a deer and it died in this guy's swimming pool.
Nice.
Well, obviously he was pissed, you know?
Yeah, naturally.
So they go up there and he's calling the cops. Easy cracking. Yeah, well, it was dead. Like, okay, so it was wintertime, obviously. It was deer season. He had one of them green tarps over his swimming pool. But you know how they still got a little bit of water?
Oh, yeah.
Well, it had blood and all this. He's going to have the pool clean. It was just a whole mess. It's just I wish I could remember the name of that. It was like a reality TV. It wasn't a hunting show.
Right.
I mean, I guess it was because they hunted deer and stuff, but they didn't like actually show a lot of the deer hunting part of it. It was more of the... trying to get permission to go in there and deer hunting, shooting deer in people's backyards. Like, these were supposed to be like a nuisance deal they were doing. It was a show and I can't remember.
I'll tell you what, anybody listening, you live in town somewhere and you got some great old big deer.
Give us a call. We'll come shoot them.
Yeah, holler at us.
And you know what? People don't think about. So over here at the lake, we got a part of the lake. It's the Horseshoe Bend. And guys, I can tell you right now, there are some giant bucks over there. And it is nothing but a couple golf courses and a ton of condos.
Some resorts.
And a way overpopulation.
Why aren't you beating on doors?
Huh?
Why aren't you beating on doors?
Wow.
You have to be a resident of Horseshoe Bend.
To hunt.
And then you have to sign up. It's like a draw type deal, yeah. Justin.
Yeah. It's like a big peninsula.
Yeah.
But just go rent you a condo in there and become rich.
Yeah, there you go.
I tell you what else they got over there, and we realized this year because we go to concerts every year over at Shady Gators, and on our way there, they got an overabundance of groundhogs.
Out of control.
Like, okay, so Horseshoe Bend's probably... Well,
so here's the deal. If Iowa is like the big buck mecca of the United States... Horseshoe Bend has got to be the groundhog mecca of the United
Well, there's
States.
Like three golf courses down through there. And
at least.
Yeah. Well, like right by the road, there's three. Yeah, you know, once you get off in there, there's more. And we drove down through there one day, and I think we counted like 27 or 28. Was it 40? 40 groundhogs. And this road's probably 8 miles long, the
total.
Whole thing.
Yeah.
Like from one end of this peninsula to the other is probably 8 miles. And we were basically going to the end of it to get to the Shady Gators. Anybody that's ever been there, he knows what we're talking about. 40 groundhogs, guys, just off the road.
And that's probably where they filmed Caddyshack at, ain't it?
It might
probably
be.
Probably, I don't know.
I don't know. It is insane how many groundhogs was. It was. Just, it got to be funny. Like, after a minute, we're like, oh, look, groundhog. And then, oh, there's another one. And then we're like, okay, where's the next one at? And then it kind of turned into a game. And I mean, they were just everywhere.
Yeah.
But so there we went on our, took a right turn from deer season to the right overpopulation of groundhogs. But hey,
sorry.
It's a cool story. I mean.
There we was
with the groundhog situation.
That's what podcast is all about. Getting on tangent.
Oh, yeah. But, I don't know. I'm going to keep grinding away on the deer. I don't know if it's going to work out. Like I said, I'm to the, if it's brown, it's down mode.
I'm going to probably go duck hunting, shoot, I don't know, 2 or 3 bands.
So my buddy Austin went, all right, I forgot all about this.
Did he shoot a band?
No.
Oh, okay, good. Go ahead.
So last week on the podcast, we talked about how we were going to go, me and Swadley was going to go duck hunting. So me and Justin go duck hunting Friday and done pretty good. We shot a actually shot a whole bunch of stuff. Like, we didn't shoot the same duck twice.
I noticed a lot of stuff, a lot of variety.
It was supposed to be a mallard hunt, and we got there and seen all the mallards just wasn't having it, which we didn't have the best hide in the world. But boy, the diver ducks wore us out. Like, I shot a box and a half of shells. And we had a good time, killed a lot of birds. Well, the next day, Austin, my wife's cousin, he come in to town from work, and he's been wanting to go duck hunting. So I was like, all right, well, I was like, let's go to Palme de Terre. Well, it was going to be really cold that day, like stupid cold. And I'm like, we're not even going to, let's not even take a boat. Let's just walk in. There's a spot up there I knew, because that way if we got cold or if somebody did fall in, you're 20 yards from the truck. The parking lot was there and you can hunt just right there. So we're driving up there in my trusty old Chevrolet. And I got all the way to Wheatland and my fuel pump went out in my truck. So my little boy Drake was with us, and he was madder than hell because we didn't get to go duck hunting. My brother-in-law came and hauled my truck home and had to give me crap about it all the way home, you know. So, but Austin...
Like a rock, huh?
Oh, yeah.
Now, what time in the morning was that when you called him?
5 o'clock. I waited till 5 o'clock. That's not when we broke down. I waited that long to call him. So he was thrilled because he's a morning person, you know. All the Gerards are.
Yeah, he messaged me right away, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah, but you were probably up.
I was up.
Yeah. But, so Austin ended up going with his buddies the next day. Well, they killed pile of mallards on Palme de Terre, 20 feet from where I was going to, well, not really, but, you know.
Just right there.
A couple hundred yards from where we were going to go. And I was like, gosh, dang it, man. And he said that Palme de Terre Lakes was just loaded plumb full of ducks. Which it should be. It got really cold up north, and I think it pushed the last. This is the last push, which the duck season runs until the end of the month. So,
and we've had kind of a mild week, so they should hang out here.
Shouldn't go nowhere, I wouldn't think. They may scatter out a little bit, get on the farm ponds and stuff, but we're supposed to get some snow and stuff Saturday. I don't know if it's going to be much, but it's supposed to get good and cold and snow. So I think we definitely need to go get tank loaded and go see if we can kill us some ducks. So I think that's what our plan will be. And then
I did, go ahead.
No, that's go ahead.
I did go pull, two blinds and a camera this weekend though.
Dang. Workaholic, you.
I'm telling you.
I took down a couple tree stands just cause they was close to the truck and I threw them in the back of the truck, got them home. I'm dreading going and getting some of my stands cause they're down in the land down under, but
man, I hope my phone's not dead when you go to get them.
Yeah.
The camera was itchy for me to go get. I wanted to go see what I missed.
Yeah, how long is that? Was that thing out there? I mean, there was leaves on the trees and stuff, like green leaves.
I'm telling you. No, that was actually only out there for a month, 3 weeks.
Hmm. It looked like...
Something like that.
Well, it looked like a good spot.
Well, it might be, but I don't know. The very last picture I got a great big old black blur, and you could see hair, but it's so close to the camera, you can't make out what it is. So I don't know if it, and the camera was loose when I went and got it. So I don't know if maybe a deer is rubbed up against it, or...
Is there any cows around there?
No, there's no cows at all on this place.
And it's probably a bear.
And, well, there's, I don't know, man. I've never seen a bear over there.
I don't mean nothing. I never seen a bear either until this year. Had one run across my front yard, so.
It was the very last picture, and I still had, I think, 75% battery life left. So, whatever it was had spooked everything out.
Yeah. No.
But I did see
Bigfoot.
The two deer that I posted. That was before the snowstorm we had, 2 weeks ago? Something like that?
Last weekend.
And, okay. During that time, they had dropped their horns because after the snow melted when I was going to the pictures, they had come back to that spot without no horns.
Oh yeah, I've got a picture. I should have saved it to my phone. There's probably 25 deer in this picture, and half of them are bucks, and that you could just see the nubs on their head. Like, you could see they were all shed. It was pretty disheartening. I don't know. All of them but the spikes.
They're holding.
Yeah.
The spikes are holding. I don't get that.
There you go.
I think I had one spike that come in with about a 4-inch spear sticking on his head. You know, he'd lost one.
Yeah. They're losing them, guys. I know a lot of the shed hunters, you know, wait till February, which is probably good, because I'd like to wait till after deer season, just because I am actually still bow hunting, so I don't want to go tromping around in the woods too much, scaring everything off, but I don't think it's going to matter. All right, guys. Well, I think we're going to wrap up this podcast for this week. Hopefully, we got some good stuff to talk about. Our epic duck hunt we're going to go on, and all the other good stuff. This big buck I'm going to kill tomorrow, and all the good stuff we'll talk about. Well, I'd say next week we'll probably talk about how everybody's just the deer season in general went and all the good stuff. So be sure and tune in with us next week, and we'll bring you another stellar, awesome, best podcast on the radio or the web or whatever you want to call this.
Southwest Missouri.
Music to your ears. We'll have it for you. So, all right, guys. Well, thanks for listening from me, Matt, and Justin. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll talk to you guys next week.
The Ozark Traditions TV podcast crew would appreciate it if you leave a 5-star rating and subscribe on your favorite podcast apps so you don't miss an episode. And also, be sure to check out our hunting episodes on our YouTube channel, and don't forget to subscribe. While you're on the web, head on over to our Facebook page and click on the follow and like button to see what the Ozark Traditions TV crew is up to. Ozark Traditions TV would like to thank you for joining in to this week's podcast. Be sure to tune in on our next weekly podcast as we bring the outdoors inside. From all of us at Ozark Traditions TV, we thank you for listening. And remember, if you see us out in God's country, stop us. We'd like to meet you.